I'm Adrian Dunbar, and this is a story about a time in Irish society when nothing was ever quite what it seemed.
It was shock and horror that anything could actually happen like that in the Phoenix Park.
It was wrong and violent and obscene.
Welcome to Obscene, the Dublin Scandal.
There's nothing fires up the imagination in a small country more than the idea there's someone wandering around who's going for anyone.
We couldn't believe that this culprit for these crimes would have been associated with the most senior law officer in the country.
If this thing is what we think it is, it would bring down the government.
Listen to all of Obscene, the Dublin Scandal first on BBC Sounds.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Five Lives, Rugby Union Daily.
Hello, Rugby Union Daily. Thursday morning, we're continuing our build-up to the final round of the 2023 Six Nations. Big pod to come from Dublin on Friday. By the time you listen to this, we'll be on our way across the Irish Sea. Ireland, heavy favourites to complete the Grand Slam. We heard earlier in the week from Shane Horgan and Tommy Bird about what they need to do, but what do England need to do to stop this being a St. Patrick's Day procession? Danny's with us.
Top of the morning to you, Chris. How are you,
Phil? Are you heading across the Irish Sea?
I'm not heading across the Irish Sea. No, I am going to be. Well, I'm going to be watching the game at the Outer Net, actually, at this space in London where everyone can come and watch the whole of the Super Saturday back to back, and I'm going to be there chatting some nonsense about rugby. But fan, just sat there enjoying the Saturday.
As I've said many a time over the years, this podcast is not a platform for you and Monier to plug your commercial endeavours. So we will move on.
There's no plug.
To the game.
It's fact. I'm going to be there just offering my words of wisdom.
I shouldn't have even asked. Look, Danny, let's look at this through a few different angles. We can talk bigger picture about the state of English rugby, the Premiership, the gap, the 20s, the lack of a Saxons, the salary cap, promotion relegation, the EPS, all kinds of sort of bigger picture England rugby pieces. Or we can just focus in on what England needs to do to stop this being embarrassing. And I had someone DM me today who reckons Ireland will win by 70 points.
Wow.
That's obviously ludicrous. That's obviously ludicrous. But the fact we're even talking about a Grand Slam decider, a game that should, it's not a decider because England are way out of it, but you know what I mean? It should be nervousness in the air in Dublin. These Grand Slams should be so hard to come by. They should have to go so deep into the well when England are in town. That's what traditionally you'd think should be the case. So the fact that the people are messaging talking 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 points just speaks to where the two teams are. So let's start off with the first thing you think England need to do to even make this a contest.
The first thing I feel like England need to do to make it a contest is to go for Ireland. And it's obviously easier said than done, but I feel like England, against the better teams in the Six Nations, and the better teams, I mean Scotland and France, they've kind of just tried to feel their way kind of into a game. Whereas I think England's only chance out in Ireland is to go for them. And is to try things, is to be brave, go there with a brave mindset to spoil the party. Park what's happened on the weekend, because you have to. There's nothing you can do about that now. Everybody's calling you this and that. Everybody's saying you're not good enough. Everybody's saying what's going on with this England team. They're awful. Get rid of them all. All they can go and do is shut everybody up. And the only way they're going to do that is by putting on a performance that they can be proud of and the fans can be proud of, because I think from what watching at the weekend, you can forgive, I think, a couple of times France doing some brilliant play and scoring tries. But what you can't forgive in an England shirt, and fans won't forgive in an England shirt, is people giving up and people not giving their best and not giving their all, sorry. And I think there was a little bit of a case of that with some of the England boys at the weekend, which if you're the ones privileged enough and to have that shirt, you cannot give up. And I do feel like a few players maybe did at the weekend when things didn't go their way. Look, France were brilliant at the weekend. I think for that France team would have beaten any England team that have ever worn the shirt. I do believe that. I think they're exceptional. Blake just said, except if I was playing. But no, scratch that. They definitely would have still won. but I feel like England, not that they have to have a reset this week, but they've got to show a lot more this weekend. And my big thing is, as an England fan, I want to see them go there and be brave. To not go there to not lose, or to go there to just kind of see what happens. Go and try and win. Go and be really physical. Go and be brave from the start. Go and come with some move that the first play you're going to do is a reverse play, or it's a trick play, or it's something a little bit different. Don't go there with a setup play and a kick to create some momentum. Go and do something a little bit out of the box that might just fluster the Irish. And you never know. You know, ruffle a few feathers, get in their faces, make it physical, make it a little bit nasty, I would say. And I think Steve Borthwick might be saying that to Ellis Genge and the lads. Go and get in their faces. Go and make it feel uncomfortable. Go and put the pressure on them. That's what I want to see from this England team this week.
Really honest interviews with Ellis Genge and Kevin Sinfield coming up, so you don't want to miss those. And just one more before we hear from Sinfield, Danny. I completely take your point, but I think we've probably got a lot of our listeners who have been in amateur rugby club changing rooms when they're bottom of the league and about to play the team at the top of the league, and they say exactly that. Let's get under their skin. Let's give them a fright. Let's rough them up. Let's put them off their stride. It's all well and good, but if you don't have the component parts to your game to do that, how is that possible? If you're just not a good enough team, it's very much easier said than done, isn't it?
Yeah.
You must have been in situations like that at Quinns when you've had a slump and you're going to play top of the league, you're playing Saris, oh, we're going to get under their skin, and it doesn't work.
100%. And mate, it might not work. It might not work at all. It might be that England do that and start really well and they still get blown away because Ireland are a better rugby team. I do feel like we've said it throughout this Six Nations, Ireland and France are a cut above everybody, and that's been proven. England are way behind France in terms of their sort of journey, as it were. It's not X factor, but in terms of their journey, the French had a bit of heartache, a bit of pain 4, 5, 6 years ago, and hit a massive reset button, changed a lot of things, changed their structure at back at the clubs, the Jiffy rule. I think they're under 20s and now firing. You saw them destroying
Jonathan Davis.
Sorry, the Jiff rule, not the Jiffy rule. that would be an interesting rule, wouldn't it? have to play a really good, crazy Welshman in the team.
Yeah, you can't turn down numbers. The Jiffy rule. No, you can't turn down overlaps.
So go back to it. You know, they made these changes with this year in mind. This was the year that they said, by this year, we want to be the best under 20s team, have a great women's program, and be the best team in the world going into the World Cup. They're not number one at the moment, they're number two in the world, but I think France would have beaten Ireland on the weekend if they'd have played like that. I really do. I think the French have the ability to be the very best in the world if they get things right on the day. And against England last weekend, everything was put, it was almost a perfect game. Ireland this week will have some nerves, they will, because when you're playing against a team that's just been hit by 50, you know that once you've been beaten by that, it doesn't happen the next week. It can't. And they'll know that these English lads haven't turned into bad players overnight or in the past. You know, the past week, there's still some very good players there. And if things do slightly click for England, I think England could cause Ireland some problems. This problem for England is Ireland, I think, they've got the ability to score tries against anyone in the world. And looking at England's defence at the minute, it doesn't look good to me. It looks ropey. It looks like people aren't doing the right jobs off set piece. The last Penno try, for example, first phase move, I think France scored one similar to that a couple of years ago when everyone was going mad about it. But you look at it and you go, well, the tail of the line hasn't done their job. Like, that's a simple structural defensive error where the one pass beats, I think, two inside defenders. So then the backs are compromised and everybody having to shoot in. Anthony Watson at the end has to fly in because the inside hasn't been marked. And that, for me, screams either a lack of detail that the lads don't really know what they're meant to be doing, or they haven't had enough time to practice those roles, because that you shouldn't get cut on a first phase move these days. You shouldn't, because defensive numbers should be able to read the attack. But they did. It was an amazing try for France, but as a defensive coach, and I'm sure Kevin Sinfield would have looked at that, would have been mortified that someone hasn't done their job and made it look easy. But Ireland will come up with some special plays that will test England's defence. And if England are slightly off it like they were against France, then Ireland will score tries.
Yeah, let's hear from Sinfield then. Here he is.
Oh, I'm still disappointed. I'm still raw. There's still some grief around. You know, when anybody puts 50 on you, it hurts, and it should. So we've worked incredibly hard at trying to understand why, and then to try and help take us forward. We came up against a team that were red hot, the second best team in the world currently, and I think it shows the gulf that's in play at this moment in time, a gulf that we're trying to close as quickly and the best we can. The challenge for us now is we play the best team in the world currently, in Dublin on Saturday, so I don't think there's a better opposition to come up against for us. Another real challenge to see what character we've got about us, to see if we can respond. We'll learn a lot about ourselves, but about the players at weekend, and it's certainly a tight group, and I've been really impressed with how the players have responded.
Tell us about a coach's role during a week like this, after a performance like that.
What do you want to know?
What'd you do first?
Chat as coaches, try and understand why, pull some thoughts together, areas where we felt we were some distance away from where we normally are, and why those were, and then you spend a fair bit of time scrolling through and reviewing the game. I think also a lot of conversations take place, to understand players' thoughts, to understand everybody's thoughts on why. There's certainly, yeah, there's some grief. There's a lot of grief, because it's not nice. It's, you know, it's a lot of negative emotions and disappointment and embarrassment all wrapped up. But, you know, we're all responsible, and we all carry that, and we understand when you represent your country at anything, we know when you get it wrong and as badly as we did, that it hurts and you have to work through it.
A few of the players we've spoken to today, as we battle through the rain, said they weren't quite there physically, didn't quite give it their all mentally, weren't quite on it. Who takes responsibility for that? The fact the players are admitting out there they didn't feel they were physically giving the best account of themselves?
I think all of us have to. You know, I certainly wouldn't park this at the players' door. We've all got to be better, and you know, we win together, we lose together, and you know, I think there's been a fair amount of reflection from all our management team over the last few days to understand why and how we can make sure this doesn't happen again. But I sometimes think, you know, throughout my own career, there's a lot of results and performances like what we got on Saturday, and they can be quite big in changing this next course, this next path. And, you know, this, although it's horrible at this moment in time, it could turn out to be quite a big moment for us.
Because it's a fork in the road, we go one way or the other kind of thing.
Yeah, well, it's I don't know if it's a fork in the road, it's certainly a big bump in the road. We knew this wasn't going to be straightforward. We knew it wasn't going to be an easy fix. Though if it was, I certainly wouldn't have been here, and Steve wouldn't have been here. So it was never going to be straightforward, and that's not apportioning any blame anywhere. Like, we're working incredibly hard, we're doing everything we can, but at the minute it's clear to see there's a gulf, and we'll do everything we can to close that as quickly as we can. You know, we've been together 7 weeks. Within that time, we've tried to install quite a number of new things, and most big...
Too many things, maybe?
No, I don't think so. I think when you're trying to give clarity and you're trying to ensure that when players step on the field, they know exactly what their role and their jobs are, I don't think it's been too much. I just think we got it wrong on Saturday in a number of different areas, and thankfully we get a chance to try and put some of that right at weekend.
A lot spoken about in sport, confidence that players have and how it can't be manufactured or made. It's something that, you know, you either have or you don't. Do you get your confidence dented as a coach as well after a day like that?
It's certainly a reflection. Confidence is probably not a word I'd use around this group anyway. I think probably strengthens our belief, actually. You know, now we've come through this first couple of days of grief and understanding it, you know, it's probably the most adversity we've certainly faced in the last seven weeks, probably the most adversity I've faced for a number of years. So, and I think a number of the players would feel that way. These moments can be pretty special in pulling teams together and transforming how they go about the business over those next days, weeks, months, years. And, you know, this could be a really important moment for us.
Your area is the defence, and seven tries, I'm sure you'd be gutted to shit one, let alone seven. Is that the biggest area of concern, or are there others you need to fix?
For me, it's the biggest area of concern, because it's what I'm in charge of. It's been tough, but it's my job, and like I said, this was never going to be straightforward or easy. You know, you look through all of those tries and you try and pick one reason why. It's very, very different. It's a combination of different reasons, and we've worked incredibly hard the last couple of days in trying to put some of those right. Clearly, that can't affect and it can't change what happened at weekend, but we can try and do some things to ensure it never happens again, and it might happen again, but we'll continue to work as hard as we can and work through it. And like I said, clear there's a gulf at this moment in time, and we found out a lot about all of us at weekend, and we'll use that to drive us forward.
Do you need major tactical, structural, technical changes after Saturday, looking ahead to Dublin, or personnel changes, do you think?
Well, personnel, you know, there's not a boatload of changes we could make. Like, we're really pleased with our squad.
Mm-hmm.
We got it wrong on Saturday, and you know, I think it's important that we try and pick the squad that we believe gives us the best chance of winning, but also we balance that with giving guys another opportunity who deserve it. So there's a combination of the two. But no, I think there's an excitement about Saturday for us, like, to come up against the best team in the world away, when they've got a big party set up and it's St Patrick's Day and all those other peripheral things that are going on. Like, we've got enough to focus on internally that we need to fix, and we'll do everything we can to ensure we are much, much better at weekend.
It's a couple to finish, Kevin. You've not used Manu yet this Six Nations for, well, one reason or the other, just come back from suspension. George Ford as well, just come back from long-term injury. Would both of them be ready to play if need be in Dublin?
Yeah, they're both available.
And how are they looking sharpness-wise? I know they're different people, but maybe George first, then Manu.
No, they both look good.
They're both ready. Both eager to get out there, I imagine, having not played yet.
Yeah.
And in terms of Ireland, number one team in the world, away from home, playing some brilliant rugby in all kinds of different conditions and environments, is that kind of... does fear drive you on? Because, you know, if you don't get it right against Ireland on their home patch, as they go for the... it could get messy again. Is that in the players' minds? Do you think they need to... they need to turn up, otherwise the consequence could be quite severe.
Fear's quite a strong word, isn't
it?
We're talking about sport.
Trepidation?
No. I think we're coming up against a team who are fantastic. We'll give it our best shot. I think you go into anything like this with a lot of fear. You're beaten before you even start. Mm-hmm. So I think if you ask the group, the vast majority be excited. The vast majority, you know, have worked through what they need to work through. There's still some who will have some grief, if that's the best word for it, and are still working through that, but, you know, we'll give it our best shot on Saturday. It's nobody gives us a chance today. You don't give us a chance. Nobody gives us a chance. So, like, we can go and have a real go and try and do our best to ensure we don't feel like we've felt this last few days, because, you know, it's not good.
Yeah, because the external stuff is completely irrelevant to you, but you're confident you've got the internal belief to go and do a big job.
I think the players believe.
Yeah.
They believe where we're heading. Do they truly need to believe they can win at weekend? As a player, I went into a lot of games not believing I was going to win, and you find yourself in a game after 20, 30 minutes and that belief can grow. I think we have a group that want to make a better account of themselves at weekend, and we'll certainly go after that.
Brilliant. I won't keep you out in the rain any longer. Thanks a lot, Kevin.
Thank you.
Thank you. Five Lives Rugby Union Daily. Right, Danny, let's talk England team in a bit. The team is going to be named early evening. They're going to be over in Dublin, England, and going to do their team announcement from there. Lots to ponder from a selection and personnel point of view. But what are your main takeaways from listening to Sinfield there?
Yeah, I think you can definitely feel the hurt in his voice. You can feel that it's hurt him, it's hurt the team, and it would, and it probably should, to ship 53 points at home in a Six Nations is kind of unheard of. So I think they're all a bit shocked by it. Speaking to a couple of the lads beforehand, they're genuinely all confident, like really confident of winning the game. And everyone that I spoke to at the ground before that game, every single England fan said, got a great feeling about this, feel like England are going to get the job done. And I think the players and the coaches would have felt that too. So maybe that was just a blind, like a naiveness from them, that they'd forgotten just how good this France side. And I kind of said that to a few people. I was like, remember how we're not talking about a Wales here. Like, this is France that just had a massive unbeaten run, Grand Slam winners the year before. But yeah, and I think the coaches were shocked. I think the players were shocked. Fans were definitely shocked. And it would have hurt. It would have hurt Kevin Sinfield. I know he's a very proud bloke. He would take it personally that his defence shipped 7 tries, and obviously that's never going to take you anywhere in international rugby. So I'm sure, as he said, they've been working very hard, and speaking to a couple of our lads that have been in camp and have come out, the lads are working hard to fix this, and they're going to fight for everything at the weekend.
And it's a question I've asked Sinfield, and we'll hear from Genj as well in a sec. I mean, when you've got so much to fix, there's got to be a danger of trying to do too much, isn't there? In this limited time they've got from Sunday night back together, they're flying to Dublin Wednesday, Thursday.
Yeah, well, I think when Steve Borthwick and Kevin kind of got the jobs, they said they can't fix everything. They're going to take it slowly, and they're going to work on the things that they think they can have a big impact on instantly. And I'd imagine that's going to be pretty similar this week. You can't fix everything, but what you can fix in a short space of time is people's willingness and desire to get off the line and hit someone, their willingness and desire to run onto the ball hard, to go and hit someone in a breakdown, to be disciplined. I think you can work on that, because England were really ill-disciplined at the breakdown. They've got to get that right, because if they don't get that right, Ireland are going to crucify them. They really will. But if they do get that right and they get the fight that they need, that you do need to play for in England to pull on that shirt, to go to Ireland and mix it with them. Do I give England... It's a hard one, because I always talk myself into thinking, well, I think this Six Nations, everyone's kind of had that feeling. You don't really know what's going to happen. You know, we've said this before, it's really bad punditry. Like, Ireland should win by 20, 30 points this week with what's happened the last week and the previous games. But I think England are going to put on a way better show for everyone this weekend, because they have to now. If they'd have just lost...
But this is the first one. Danny, this is the first game where I think if you ask 10 pundits, 10 will go for Ireland. I think England-Scotland would have been a split. Scotland-Wales would even been a bit of a split, given Wales' brilliant record at Murrayfield.
Yeah.
I think there'd be a few Scots who would have backed themselves against Ireland. I think a few people were backing Scotland out in France. People were backing England at home to France. This feels like the first time that two of the, you know, major Northern Hemisphere nations are going up against each other, and everyone is going to back Ireland. Yeah. Now, that could, you know, everyone, the underdog has its day. But my concern from an England point of view, going back to a point Johnny Beattie made, you can talk about power, discipline, clear ruck better, but doesn't that all come under the umbrella of technique, structure, confidence, belief, purpose, energy that you get from being a team that you must have gone on the pitch in an England shirt and a Harlequin shirt and think, this team knows exactly what it's doing. And other times gone on the pitch and go, whatever we said in the changing room, there isn't that inner belief because we just don't have a good enough structure to play in.
Yeah, there is going to be some doubt in some of those players' heads, whether they say it or not. I'm sure they'll say, no, everybody believes. We all believe. We're all fully confident in our ability. But it is hard when you have taken an absolute beating the week before, that it's always the fear that, God, that could happen again. And this team is actually even better than the team we've played before. So the one thing I think England need to go to Ireland with, and this is a non-negotiable, is a complete clarity in their game plan. They have to believe and buy into their game plan and then go out there and have the skills and the bravery to execute it. So I think from watching the game against France, you were kind of like, what is England's game plan? I couldn't really see like what exactly they were trying to do. Whereas this week, I need to see in the first 5-10 minutes, oh, this is what England are trying to do. They're trying to play quickly. They're tipping it at the line so they don't get double shots, because a tip gets a single tackler and you can play quickly off that. I want to see England do that. So I want to be able to see from early doors what it is that England are trying to do. And look, mate, I'm an optimist. I saw Jurgen Klopp's interview today. Liverpool playing Real Madrid tonight. They're 5-2 down in the first leg. In his press conference today, he said, not one of you in here believes we can do it. And imagine that's like your comment about the 10 pundits that Steve Borthwick
said to me just then
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, he did. And I can, you can see that. And then, so there will be this thing in England this week where they'll be like, listen, nobody thinks we can do it. And sometimes that works because it's a powerful thing. It worked for Quinns when we won the league in 21. No one believed we could do it. And we played on that. We used that to our advantage massively. We were like, well, we genuinely believed it. Do you know what I mean? Like, but we had the belief in it because we knew that our game, if we got it right, would beat any team. Because we had better players and we ran it better and we were running an attack that no team could deal with in the Premiership that year. Whereas that's the thing, do England have that USP where they can go, well, we know that if we get this quick ball that our backs will, you know, run any team ragged. Do they have that? I don't know. So then is it a false hope? I'm not sure. Those England players will believe, but is it a false hope? I'm not so sure yet.
Yeah, and that belief topic, yeah, needs to be combined with, as you say, a clear game plan. And there were times at Twickenham when, you know, you correct me if I'm wrong, it feels as if Marcus Smith is kind of playing sometimes with the coach's voice in his head, which is saying, you know, get back to structure. We don't play within our own half. They never have a look, England, do they? They take a restart and they're immediately looking to box. They never do what Scotland do or France do, which is maybe go two phases, have a little look because they've got enough belief in their systems to go, well, if it doesn't work, we'll do a proper exit. It feels all very formulaic. That's perhaps the way England are going to play. But if you are going to play formulaically and play that kind of game plan and not play any rugby in your half, you then need to kick well and exit well, don't you? And not do things like Don Brandt did before the trial on half time, which is just get turned over from a basic restart setup. So yes, England could be a disaster to go and throw the ball around. It could be a disaster to try and do things they're not equipped to do. But whatever they do, they have to do it really accurately, really well, and really clearly, which they haven't been doing, regardless what their game plan's been.
I think that's you've hit the nail on the head there, Jonesy. England have gone with a no nonsense in your own half. If Freddie or Stewart or one of the guys at the back three can catch the ball and carry it over the halfway line, then they will do that. And they'll look to play then, but if they can't, they're kicking it. For me, though, the kicking, that plan's fine if your kicking then is on the money and you're kicking contestable kicks where you can make it a 50-50, make it a contest, like what it says on the tin. But at the moment, England are kicking slightly too long and just giving other teams opportunities to either run at them because when you've practiced kicking contestable kicks, you suddenly kick one long, the chase isn't right, people get two passes away, and you go, hang on, this isn't what happened in training. Like, why has he gone two passes and Van der Merwe's gone and scored a 60-metre worldie? Because we haven't practiced that. Every kick's been on the money in training. It's different. It's going to be different at the Aviva Stadium with a load of Irish who've been on the Guinness for a long time and ready to celebrate an amazing day.
Fans, not players.
Yeah, you have to get your kicks absolutely on the money, and you've got to get players up there to compete. At the moment, England's kicking game isn't good enough to, if they're relying on the kicking game as being their USP, if you can understand what I'm saying here.
Yeah, completely.
And I think that's what they're trying to do, but they haven't executed it well enough yet. So that does take time. That will take time. I understand that. It didn't happen straight away for Steve at Leicester. They took a few hammerings early doors when Steve came in, but he said, stick with me, stick with the process. And lo and behold, Leicester did go and win the league playing that way. So that is going to take a lot of time. But international rugby is very, very unforgiving. And if you get it wrong against a team like France, you can get battered, and they did. And if they get it wrong against Ireland, Ireland have the ability to put them to the sword as well. But if they get it right and every kick is on the money and that is their game plan, then I think it'll be a lot tighter game, and they've got a chance. But if they get it wrong, then Ireland will show their class and win, and we'll probably win comfortably.
Yeah, and the difference between club environment, you know, you guys lost five in a row. You lose five in a row in international rugby, it's terminal, isn't it?
Yeah.
But you can lose five in a row in the club game and still make the top four. It's completely different, and that's what, you know, everyone experiences, I imagine, when they step up to international level, that the margins are so fine and it is so unforgiving, as you say. So selection-wise, personnel-wise, Chessam out. From what I was hearing, Chessam was going to play six in the same way that Laws last week was going to play six. His injury meant that they stayed with the same back row from Wales. So it'll probably then be the same back row with Johnny Hill in for Itoje, or Asikwe in alongside Itoje, not in for Itoje, but someone in for Chessam in the second row. And then the same old conversation around the midfield. Lawrence is out. Feels like Manu slots right back in. And then I would say this had been a game that was always going to be Farrell's, going by the sort of Borthwick horses for courses thing. He'd have picked Smith against France, Farrell against Ireland. Whether you agree that you should have a different 10 for different games or not, it feels like the plan is to go Farrell, Tuilagi, Slade, a kind of back to the future midfield, enforced by Lawrence's injury. But it is that midfield that did so well against Ireland. The only problem with that, it was 4 years ago, a very different England team and a very different Ireland team.
Yeah, a few swapping and chopping and changing, I think, and some forced. I mean, yeah, I did hear that Ollie Chessam's injury was a fairly bad one, so we do wish him all the best. I think he's been one of England's standout players so far this Six Nations, so that's desperately unlucky for him. So obviously a force change there, whoever they go with. Maybe they go with Asikwe, or I saw George Martin, one of Leicester's second rows, who's back fit, played really well at the weekend for Leicester, as in the squad. Whether he'll make it into the matchday squad, I'm not sure. I think Manu comes straight in. Manu's obviously been training. I think they've got him in great shape the past few weeks where he hasn't been playing. I know for a fact he'll be raring to go and ready to run at a few people and get stuck in. Does he stick with the 10 that played the week before, or does he, if he was picking markers for this week, is this more a game for Owen Farrell or George Ford? I'm not sure. I don't know how you feel about Jonesy picking a team for the team you're playing, or do you just roll with the same team? Where do you sit on that?
I think it's a bit weird because, you know, name me a great team in history that chops and changes their 10, 12 and 13. It doesn't really happen. I was surprised he played Smith against France. I was surprised he was sent back. I thought they were building something with that Farrell, Slade, Lawrence midfield. So that just took me, as I said many times on the pod, I found that a little bit unusual that they went for Marcus and sent him out the squad and didn't have that time together. But I also took the argument, of course, that he needed the game time. So, look, obviously, when it comes to the World Cup, England are going to have to settle on a combination. And while Borthwick is not using any of these games, surely, as any kind of experimentation, it might have been the time to play Smith at home with his midfield, without Farrell there. And maybe Borthwick just had a gut feeling, could have worked. The reality is, Marcus Smith, Owen Farrell, George Ford, Johnny Wilkinson, Rob Andrew, whoever had been at 10, wouldn't have made a huge difference. I think England wouldn't have lost by as much with Farrell. I think there would have been maybe a different shape, a different structure, maybe a few better decisions made in the heat of the battle, potentially. But this was an issue across the park, wasn't it? It was an issue about 10. But the fact that we're talking about it shows that England haven't quite nailed down that 10 and centre combination, which has been the case for ages.
Yeah, I still think there's time, there's justification for any of those three to play because they're all brilliant fly halves. It just all boils down to what are England trying to do over in Ireland? What type of game are they going to play? If you're going to go play a wide, expansive game plan where you want to get the ball to space quickly, then you play Marcus Smith or you play George Ford. If you want to play...
But you absolutely have to dominate the collisions and you have to be such
your tens not dominating collisions
team
though.
To do that
your tens not going to dominate the collisions
no but look, let's be honest, are England going to win this game blitzing Ireland, lightning fast ball, throwing shape at them that the rugby world's not seen? Of course they're not. So their best bet is to, sadly, is to bang it up in the air. I imagine, correct me if I'm wrong, but putting Marcus Smith in there with a pack going, but just play Farrell. Play Farrell or Ford.
Yeah.
There's no point playing Marcus Smith and getting him to play territory and getting Van Poortvliet to play territory. If England were a super slick, well-oiled machine, then you can layer on that attacking X factor Smith will give you. But they're not there. So I can't see him playing unless there's an injury.
Yeah, I think you're right, Jonesy. I think if England are going to play this tactically disciplined... I'm not going to say boring. I'm going to say pragmatic approach. Then there are alternatives, obviously, to Marcus that have played that game plan a lot and played it very well. But I've said, and I'll stand by it on this pod for a long time, I don't think you beat Ireland by doing that. I don't think you beat France by doing that. That's why I feel like you have to do something a little bit different. And for me, the one person in that squad that's a bit different is Marcus, and it is a different way of seeing the game and a different way of playing, but he has to have a free license. And as you said, maybe the flow of that England team maybe isn't at the level yet where you can just say to Marcus, right, go run it, show us what you can do, because they haven't got all the other nuts and bolts in place yet that say a France do or an Ireland do. You know, I think if you put Marcus in that France team, he'd look $1 million because they've been on their journey. They know their game plan inside and out. They know what they're trying to do, where and when. He's also, you know, they've also got a fair old pack you can throw a ball to and you're going to get some quick ball. But that French team has been together for a while now. There's been a consistent selection process where similar players are playing all the time. You develop these relationships with players and then it becomes effortless. It becomes so natural on the pitch. And England, unfortunately, haven't had that time yet, but they will. It's just these games have come at an earlier time that they're ready for, unfortunately. So they kind of got to go in with what they've got, and that might then lead to a simpler game plan, which is what Steve and the coaches have decided to do, which is, you've got to say, it's understandable.
Yeah, in the circumstances. And England have had glimpses. You know, the glimpses of the championship. I mean, it's clutching at straws, definitely. But the Watson try in Cardiff, one of the Malins tries against Scotland was good build-up play. Little bits here and there. South Africa 2021. Little bits against France 21, maybe. Ireland in 2020. But it's 5-10 minutes here and there. The last time they looked a really cohesive, coherent, energised, well-drilled machine was probably back to the World Cup, wasn't it? So it's been a long, long time since England have attacked with that intensity, consistency, accuracy. And I, you know, it'd be very hard to see that suddenly coming together in match of days come the weekend. Anyway, What's England's attitude going to be like? What has England's attitude been this week after that Twickenham humiliation? Here's their captain from last weekend, Ellis Genge.
Five Lives, Rugby Union Daily.
Ellis, thanks loads for joining us today. What has been said and done in the few days since Saturday?
We've had our review. We've been told why we lost. Reflected, trained, and then got on with it. Because you got to park the bus reasonably quick to then move on to Ireland.
Yeah, when you do have a defeat like this, what's the first thing you have to do as a player?
Be honest, look at yourself first, and then find out why you lost. And I think we've done a good job of that.
Is there one reason why you lost or a number?
A numerous reasons, yeah.
And how did you go about fixing those reasons? Is it possible?
Yeah, of course it is. I think it'll take a while, but I don't think anyone's alien to that. I think we're all very much so on board with this is a process of getting better, and there's quite a big gap between us and the top of the world at the moment.
So all the reasons that the game went why it went, you know, anybody who watched the game would know them. Do you have to highlight a few and look to fix them well, or do you try and just do a little bit of everything?
Oh, I see what you mean. Be really good at all of them, or...
Well, I suppose if they... Say there's five reasons why you like physicality, set piece, defence.
Hone in on one as opposed to...
Yeah, is it too hard in 5 days to fix 10 things?
I think they're all underpinned by one thing, which is like fighting and working hard for each other. And I don't think we necessarily did that for the whole game, which is unusual for us and probably why the scoreline was the way it was.
So it's unusual for you and unusual for a Steve Borthwick coach team, because the message about Steve wanted from his team was to have that high work rate. Can you pinpoint why that didn't happen?
Well, it doesn't happen overnight, you know. It's like relationships, they take a while to grow, to trust and to be there for each other. You can be as nice as you want to someone for a fair few weeks, don't mean they're going to have your back for when the going gets tough, which I don't actually necessarily think is a characteristic of ours in terms of folding. I don't think these players, you watch them play club rugby and the players we've got, myself included, I think we've actually got some real dog. Just because of the way the game went, we took a foot off the gas, and France, being second best team in the world at the moment, ran away with it.
So when there are issues over things like fight and work rate, is that when you have to have honest conversations with each other in a team room?
Yeah.
And you've had them this week?
Yeah. We had them at the time, and we've had them upon reflection as well.
Does everyone get involved in those, or just some senior players leading it?
Depends. Reviews mostly coaches, to be honest, but you have quiet conversations as well.
I remember a game, I'm sure you remember it too, at the Coventry against Wasps when you were
44-12, first game as captain, I remember.
And you were really honest afterwards about letting the fans down and the performance. Months later, you were lifting the Premiership with Steve. So it can be done. What did you do then, and what can you take from that experience with Leicester, where you went to the bottom to reach the top, that you might be able to translate here?
We did nothing different in terms of mentally or preparation for that game then that we did for the final 18 months later.
Right.
Nothing. It was just something that grew.
And do you see it growing here as well?
Of course, yeah. Just be patient.
Yeah.
Because the difference is when you're at one club and you're training and you don't have different people coming in every week who play different ways at their club and have other things going on. So to change that whole mindset within, what have we had, 6 weeks, 7 weeks, it'd be difficult off the back of a 7-year tenor of someone else. It's a tough ask, but it's a challenge that we're welcome with open arms.
How difficult is it sort of mentally to recover from a day like that as a rugby player?
As I said, like you sort of, after the game, see your family and have a drink with each other, and it's actually quite easy to park it day one. It was day two that really gets you when you start to review it. You got to go out and train and try and pretend everything's okay to then prep for number one in the world on Saturday. So that process was tough, but yeah, I think we're over it now.
Something that is spoken about a load when it comes to pro sport is confidence. You can't manufacture it, I imagine. You can't buy it. How do you go about getting it when you might not have it?
Training well, showing each other that you want to work for each other. Graft. That's all you need, really, isn't it? Like, you work hard for someone. I don't think there's massive like difference in skill level and player caliber and stuff within majority of the teams in the world. It's just people working hard on the day, and effort, and the things that you can't necessarily coach. Sorry, the things that you can control. because talent and stuff is another question. But I don't think we lacked that. It was just being on the same page and all fighting to the bitter end, and it's just what we didn't do on Saturday.
You've been involved in the camp since 2016, so yep. 7 years and counting. Do you think the quality is different, the depth is different to what it was back then?
Player-wise. Jeez, you're testing me. I can't remember if we had Hask, didn't we? And he had zero talent. No, as I said, I think players have got faster, stronger. And you look at Henry Arundel, he's mental quick and he's reasonably strong as well. I think he's stronger than me in the gym. So I think players get genetically, just this generation are wild. But there's a lot of players now that there were back then, especially senior players, people sort of finding their own feet in that. But no, I don't think it's necessarily a player disparity. I think it's literally just being on the same page and the way the Premiership's evolved and changed, for better or for worse, is clearly affecting play style within when we came into camp. So it's just about getting on the same page.
I know we're getting onto the bigger issues here, Ellis, but do you think the gap is bigger, smaller, where it always has been between the Prem and international? When you're looking at the really top teams like a France?
That's enormous, yeah.
Gap's enormous. Has it got bigger?
Between the Premiership and France?
Between the Premiership and the highest end of international rugby, like a game against France.
Yeah.
It's
huge,
But it's bigger than... It's always been there, but is it bigger?
I'd say, we had a lot more overseas players, internationals, playing in the Premiership back then, didn't you? So, yeah, I guess you'd say it was bigger now than what it was back then.
Yeah.
I'm not using that as a reason to play.
No, it's just a sort of more of a bigger picture thing.
Yeah.
Steve was lamenting after the game the lack of power.
Lamenting. What does that mean?
Bemoaning.
Was bemoaning?
Regretting.
Okay.
Yeah. He was regretting the power disparity between England and France. How do you go about getting more power? Because I imagine it's more complicated than bigger, stronger players, because you guys are big and strong.
Yeah, again, it just comes down for me to mindset and ethos within the group. We're working on it. I can assure you this group won't be the same on Saturday.
Mm. And as well as that ethos and work rate, is it also about purpose, dynamism, almost mindset, knowing what you're doing in your roles and stuff like that?
As I just say it again, it's just about fighting for each other. And I think, although we've known each other for a long time, we actually have to find out about each other and go through some hardships to then lead on to something special. And this is our first bump in the road.
Let's move on to Ireland then. Some would say it's the worst possible assignment after a result like that to go to the number one team in the world. But could you
all the best? Yeah.
You could see it's the best, could you? Yeah.
Why not?
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
No hiding place kind of thing.
We can't hide anyway. We found out on Saturday, didn't we? Yeah. There is no hiding place. So I think naturally you'll see a reaction. Will we find out much more about ourselves, potentially, if we front up? For me, and it sounds quite soft to say, but it's not necessarily about going out there and thinking about scoring all mental tries, and we just want to see as a team, us as a group, fight for each other till the last minute, and I think we'll get that.
And for all of our listeners who aren't pro rugby players or haven't been in a pro rugby dressing room, they've probably been in their own dressing rooms, but obviously chalk and cheese. Is that about revving yourself up, or is it far more complicated than just going out in a sort of mental state?
Yeah, we were revved up on Saturday, I don't think that's the golden ticket. This week, I think it's just about getting over Saturday, first and foremost, training well, and then searching for that reaction. Trained really well today. One more training day before we go out and play Ireland, and then we fly over. So time will tell. It's a mystery, isn't it?
Yeah. And in terms of Steve, someone you know really well, how's he been since Saturday? Because it would have hurt him, this result.
Yeah, I just said in there to the writers, it's actually one thing that I really admire about Steve, is that he's emotionally very consistent, whether you win by 100 points or lose by 50. He usually reacts the same, which shows the measure of the man.
And in terms of Ireland, St Patrick's Day, going for the Grand Slam.
Mental, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of written for them, but you could do something about that.
Yeah, we can. What an occasion. I just said again, it would be amazing to be Irish and have England come over and have a Grand Slam opportunity when they've lost 50 points on the weekend and on St Patrick's Day, a day that's literally made for them. So yeah, we're gonna turn up and we're gonna fight.
Wish you well. Thanks, Ellis.
Cheers.
Five Lives Rugby Union Daily.
Okay, Danny, right, really appreciate Ellis Genge's honesty, but that will alarm England fans to hear that they weren't working hard enough and they weren't giving it their all for 80 minutes. Because if us on this side of the fence ever question you guys' heart, desire, work rate, you don't take kindly to that, because that's the one thing you don't question. You can question how good people are or their kicking game, the tactics, how efficient they were at the breakdown clear, but you never question a rugby player's heart. So for him to come out and say we weren't giving it everything for 80, what do you reckon England fans make of that? What do you make of that as a former player? And is he just being realistic? Is it actually just the reality that sometimes that can happen?
Yeah, I think he has been realistic. I think he's being honest. I think it's fairly refreshing whenever you hear Ellis Genge speak. I don't think he gives you any BS. He speaks how he feels. And I'm sure that review for those lads on Sunday or Monday would have been a really tough place to be in, a tough change room, because, like you say, you can make mistakes and it can be decision-making or skill execution, which you can forgive. But there's one thing in rugby you can't, it's a non-negotiable, and especially a non-negotiable when you're wearing an England shirt, is you don't give up. I don't think you'll see an attitude problem from England this weekend. I really don't. I don't think Ellis Genge will let it happen. For hearing his voice there, I can hear it, the hurt in his voice. I don't think the players will let it happen. I don't think the coaches will let it happen. And I don't think the players will let themselves get into that again. They'll give everything this weekend. Will they be good enough to beat Ireland? I'm not sure, mate. I think Ireland are too good, and I think Ireland will win. But I think you'll see a much more combative performance from this England team.
Yeah, and England can't afford to let that happen, can they? English rugby can't afford a 50 pointer. Can you imagine? It would be unprecedented.
No, look,
in the professional era,
I did see that.
Yeah, and then it would lead to so many root and branch questions about English rugby if they're not being asked already, Danny. So this is proper sink or swim time. This is proper, you know, I put it to Kevin Sinfield, is it a fork in the road? I think it's definitely a pivotal moment. They need to prove that France was an aberration, don't they? And that actually they can build something, if not for this year, but certainly for next year, because England fans are about to hear a lot about developing, a lot about building. They have to be really, really patient.
Yeah, that what happened at Saturday can't happen again this Saturday. If England are blown away by an unbelievable Ireland side, then I think people will go fair play. They are, you know, maybe they are 20 points better than us at the minute, but they're not 50. You don't let someone beat you by 50. And I don't think it'll happen. I hope it doesn't happen, because I don't want to see that. I've got good friends who are playing in that team, and I know they're better than losing by 50 points. But unfortunately, the stark reality of it is, and we keep harping back onto it, Ireland are way ahead of the curve in terms of England. England have kind of had a little reset. Ireland are flying. Like, they went to New Zealand this summer, won a test series. Like, they're in a completely different spot to England on their journey. I think people will get sick of hearing this, but you can't just expect unbelievable results from this England team overnight. But what you can expect is a team that you could be proud of still for giving it their all and taking it to the Irish. If they just go there and sit back and let the Irish play on them, then it could be a fair few points. But like I said at the start, I want to see this English side bounce back and show what it means to wear the shirt. I think that's what the fans want to see as well.
And if Ireland do win with a bit to spare, as Ross Petty's pointed out on Twitter, it'll be one of the all-time great championship performances, because they've won by 13, 14, 15 and 24 so far. Only four times ever has a team won Grand Slams with every game winning by more than six. The most convincing, probably going back to England in 1992, or most recently England 2003. So they've got a chance to put themselves out there as one of the greatest championship sides of all time in terms of a one-off championship performance. And as for England, yeah, and that point Kevin Sinfield made just to finish, Danny, he didn't come out and say that England have total belief they can win, but they're kind of banking on that belief growing during the game. You know, Ireland drop a few balls, a few nerves creep in, suddenly it's level at half time, an intercept, one of those, you know, backs the wall. The trouble is, I think Ireland might be too good. However, England might be able to hassle. That's maybe an indictment of what England are, that's the way we're talking about their only chance of winning. But yeah, they just can't be like they were against France, which is 10-0 down before they've blinked.
No.
Because then it's surely all over.
No, I think Kevin's been realistic there. I think if you ask any of those England players or England coaches, are you a better rugby team at the moment than Ireland? They would all say no. Like I wouldn't believe any of them if they said, no, we're a better team than Ireland. They're not. But Ireland could feel the pressure massively of what this weekend could mean to them. Like, I heard Andy Farrell in the week saying it's literally what dreams are made of for these Irish lads that have grown up in Ireland. Like, on Paddy's Day, to potentially beat England, to win a Grand Slam at home. You know, I've never experienced winning a Six Nations at home, let alone a Grand Slam. Like, I don't even know how those Irish lads are feeling, that how good that feeling will be and how big the party will be after it. But there is pressure on them. That comes then with a pressure that, do they then maybe go in their shells a little bit and think, right, let's just feel our way through this and get through. Whereas, I mean, I don't think this is going to happen, because I think with Andy Farrell in this Irish team, he's got them full of confidence, full of belief that they just go and play and they're a machine and they'll just go for it, put the foot on the throat of teams. But England, going back to England, they have to go in with an absolute siege mentality of spoiling the party. And anything could happen. You know, a red card could happen in the first 5 minutes. And in England are playing against 14-man Ireland. That then you go, okay, well, here we go. We've got a chance. Or you get an intercept try early. Anthony Watson runs the length of the field. England goes 7-0 up. Then it's a different game. If England had scored early against France, I think it's a different game. I don't think they would have won still. But I don't think they would have lost by 50. So, as you say, the start, I think, is absolutely crucial. If England can get a foothold in the game, get some territory, and then hit them with something early doors, hit them with an early try or something a little bit magical, a bit special, then suddenly get the doubt going in those Irish players with all that pressure on them. I hope that this might be the case, Jonesy, but it's a glimmer. It's a glimmer, but it's a game of rugby.
Yeah. I mean, look... Yeah, it's a game of rugby. It's an England team that is packed with experience. They might not be on form. They might be past their best. They might be struggling in all kinds of areas. But yeah, this is not Timbuktu, is it? You know, this is English rugby can't get to a situation where they are going somewhere to make up the numbers. So mission very, very difficult. But yeah, you can't quite call it mission impossible, even though you would back Ireland probably 7 days a week. We'll pick it up. Danny, it's going to be good, the final day.
Enjoy your trip, mate.
Any upsets on the cards?
No, not this weekend for me, Clive.
For you, Clive, Scotland, France, Ireland, Ireland Slam.
Yeah, I think
so. And you get a flight over to Ireland late door Saturday to join in the celebrations.
No, I'll be at home. I've experienced Paddy's Day in the Six Nations at Ireland. It's an incredible experience as a player. It wasn't a great experience because we got beat, but that city, that country is going to be going off on the weekend. You're going to have a great time, mate, and the Guinness tastes nicer over there, doesn't it? So could you just send me a pic?
It probably doesn't, but it just is like, oh, it's closer to the factory.
Yeah. No, it definitely tastes better. It definitely tastes better over there.
Yeah, but that's like psychological, isn't it? It's like your brain's a powerful tool.
You send me a pic of you trying to split the harp in your first Guinness, please.
I'll split the harp first time. Nice one. Cheers, Danny.
Cheers, mate. Take care.
Three words: Grand Theft Auto.
Or as millions of us know it, GTA.
It involves stealing cars.
Innovative.
Joyriding.
Provocative.
And being chased by police cars.
Fun.
I'm Bugsy Malone, and this is my grandest game. For 25 years now, it's been one of the most controversial games on the planet.
What an earthly good can come from producing a game that allows you to behave like this?
I'm one of the very best. It said a lot to me about my life when I needed it most. And that's a story that's going to get told.
Bugsy Malone, my grandest game.
Out now on BBC Sounds.